you said that your job had become your identity and you had to unravel that. And I think this is something a lot of people struggle with, that they tie their whole sense of worth into their job title, their salary, the company they work for. So how did you go about unraveling that?
I think it was the process of thinking about what is it you want to be achieving? Where are you going? Who do you want to work with? But the most important thing was, it's really interesting when you go through the exercise of writing down, so what are your achievements? What have you actually achieved within that time that you were there? And what are the challenges you went through? And what did you learn from those? But you are not your job role. You are not the organization. You need to have that sense of self to really contribute to the organization, I believe.
Julie, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am really excited to have you on today. As I was just saying before we hit record, I was having a bit of a fangirl moment on your LinkedIn profile, looking through all the incredible things that you've done and the book that you've written as well, which we're going to come on to talk about. But can you just give the listeners a little bit of an introduction to who you are, your journey, and what brought you here today? So Julie, over to you.
Thank you, Georgie. It's so good to be here with you. Okay, so a bit of background. I've had a 21-year corporate career, which I absolutely loved, and, you know, climbed up, started at the bottom, climbed up into senior leadership. And it was an awesome career until I sort of made the realization that the organization's values and my values were going into completely separate ways. So I had to make the heartbreaking decision to leave. And I just thought, oh, well, I'll start my own business, and jumped into that and had no idea what I was doing. But 15 years later, I'm still here and have a great business. So I'm very much centered around the leadership coaching space, keynotes and workshops. And I have my podcast, Leading You, and I have two books, the first called Busy and the second one that's just been released called You Always Have a Choice. So I'm an animal lover and I live in Melbourne, Australia. So that's a very short snapshot.
Right. I love that. And it's just the perfect gateway for me to sort of pick apart everything and get into it. But the first thing I would say is obviously how brave you were, because it takes a lot. And I was smiling as you said, you had no idea when you went from corporate to starting your business, because I've been there. I guess I was in corporate. I was in, worked for a recruitment company, then started my own recruitment company. And the naivety was just, I mean, I think if I'd actually stopped to think, I never would have done it. Right. But you just have all of this, like, you know, self-belief and confidence. You go, yeah, I can do it. So you said something really interesting as well. You said that your values no longer aligned. I think there's a lot of people that are working in organizations where they feel that something is wrong, something doesn't add up. What was the point for you when you decided, actually, this is just not right for me? Were there physical signs, emotional signs? What was sort of going on at that time that made you take the leap and leave?
Yeah, I think there was a couple of things. As I climbed the ladder and I reached a point where I think I did my dream job. So I had, you know, a team. I had 26 direct reports. It was a large team, and I had to turn that business around because it was poor performing and I had to get back on track. I absolutely love that role, and I achieved great things with my team in that role. And so I got promoted, and I didn't actually want to leave. So I got promoted into the, you know, the ivory tower, and it was much more of a, I suppose, it wasn't a people leadership role. It was more being the support to the people leaders. It was more understanding the finances and of the greater business. It's not something that I love doing. I don't love doing that. So I started feeling really unhappy and unfulfilled within the role, and it started really making me question what I was doing, why I'm doing it. I didn't enjoy it. I worked for an awful leader at the time, and I thought, oh, there's got to be something better than this. So I navigated my way into another role where I'd be back into coaching people, but it still didn't, you know, light that fire inside. And all I wanted to do was go back to what I was doing, but that wasn't looked on favorably and as a good career decision. So it was like, okay, well, I think the higher I got as well, the more I saw in terms of the objectives and what was really happening within the business and its direction. I thought, I just don't align with this anymore. And it was a process of grieving for it too, because I'd grown up in that organization. I spent 21 years there, and that was half of my life at that time. So it was like, okay, what do you want to do? What's your passion? And how can I do what I want to do while being really happy doing it? And, you know, I had a mortgage at the time. I was single, so I was the sole provider for the mortgage to keep that ticking along. I thought, oh, you know, well, I've always been really successful in these roles, so I'm sure I can jump out and do my own business. So it was really that feeling of being unhappy, and so it's the inability to be able to do the role that I wanted to do because it wasn't looked upon favorably as a good career decision.
It's sad, isn't it? And when you sort of reflect that, it's often this sort of lie, isn't it? Where we sort of work our way up, and then we'll be happy. And then you're at the top of this career ladder and you sort of look around and go, is this all there is? And this isn't making me happy. This isn't making me feel fulfilled. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. But, you know, then a lot of people would go into other companies and other organizations. So you decided to obviously start your own business, which is fantastic. So can you explain that sort of journey for you from going from, like, I guess, an employee to sort of an entrepreneur? Because I've sort of gone through that journey myself. And like I said, it's quite the eye-opening experience. And there are days where you're sort of sitting there realizing that I can't afford this sick day because I have to generate this income. Because if I don't work, I don't get paid. And it's a real, like, I guess, mental shift that I had to go on. But I'd also love to know, like, it was for me as well. And I don't know what your story has been like, this institution of like 9 to 5 and be at my desk at a certain time. And I had to unravel a lot of actually toxic way of working. And that's been a real big journey for me. But I'd love to share that sort of transition you made into now running your own business and consulting and helping organizations and businesses, because that's obviously the business that you're in, if that, like, leadership coach.
Yes. I would say the transition for me looking back was really hard. It was, you know, a real challenge for me because I did, you know, had that, I suppose, that self-belief that I could do it. Then you jump out. You don't have the infrastructure that you took for granted. You don't have the processes or the policies that you took for granted. No one's there to do your IT or do your Excel and your PowerPoints. It's like, oh my God, I've got to do this myself. But also, and I don't want to sound really egotistical here, but you're part of a bigger thing when you work for, you know, I used to work for a large financial institution, and you're part of a big, you know, beast, if you like, and you've got that brand behind you. When you're in your own business, you're like this very little fish in a very big pond. And I feel like I lost a sense of significance, if you like, because, you know, I wasn't a leader anymore. I sort of lost a leader of people anymore. So I felt like, oh, well, you know, I'm just leading myself now. And I did lose that sense of, oh, well, I'm expected to perform a particular role. I'm expected to show up at a particular time. It's like you've given everything to that organization, and that's what your identity is attached to as well. And then coming out of that and going, well, who exactly am I if I'm this entrepreneur who I have absolutely no idea about? And when you have to, you know, create a website and what's your brand and, you know, what do you stand? What are you going to put on the website and how do you do that? It's just a massive journey of a whole new awakening of a brand, a new world that you didn't know existed out there, and taking responsibility for getting stuff done for you, not for others, not because it's the expectation, not because you have to meet the company's KPIs or that you want your bonus or whatever that looks like, but you have to show up for you. And for me, it was also managing others' expectations as well, because it's like, oh, Julie's out now. She's got all of this freedom so she can catch up for lunch. She can look after my kids for, you know, an hour, or she can do this or that. And I did get I got caught up into that until I realized, like, oh my God, I've got to make my mortgage payment and there's not a whole lot in the bank here. So I don't want to be tapping into resources. So that's when I'm like, okay, what am I going to be doing here? How am I going to get business? Because another thing is, back then, networking wasn't so prevalent. Like, we didn't know a whole lot about it back then. So my network was within those four walls of the organization. And you would say that I was institutionalized there. So it was just a massive journey of understanding how to be a small business owner, connecting with small business people so that I could understand what was going on. And if I look back and did it again, I would do that prior to jumping out.
I know hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? But it's so easy to look back and go, oh, if I'd known that, I wouldn't have done that. But actually, it's in the lessons that we grow from as well. So sometimes I look back and I go, oh, what wise head now, I'd have handled that situation totally different. But actually, when I really think about it, I go, no, would you really go back and change it? Because had that not happened, you wouldn't have learned that lesson, then you wouldn't have gone and done that. So I don't know, I feel like sometimes life is sent to test us and evolve us as well. But you said something really interesting. Then you said that your job had become your identity and you had to unravel that. And I think this is something a lot of people struggle with, that they tie their whole sense of worth into their job title, their salary, the company they work for. And I think that's a really big journey that a lot of people have to go on, whether they go on and start their own business or not, because our whole identity is tied up in what we do. So how did you go about unraveling that? Because I think there could be a lot of things in there that people could really benefit from listening from.
Yeah. I think it was the process of really thinking about, okay, so this is your journey now. What is it you want to be achieving? Where are you going? Who do you want to work with? As a starting point, so really defining what my goals were. But the most important thing was working out who was I and what were my values solely. So not within the organization, because I'd done that work. I had a brand, if you like a personal brand within the business. But like, so what's my brand? Why would people come to me? And really working out what is my worth? Like, what is my value to other people? And it's really important. It's really interesting when you go through the exercise of writing down, so what are your achievements? What have you actually achieved within that time that you were there? And what are the challenges you went through? And what did you learn from those? And then sort of packaging that up into, well, this is who I am and this is what I stand for. And this is what you're going to get from me if you decide to work for me. This is how I can support you or your business or your leaders, but getting very, very clear on that. because I work with a lot of people who are looking to like potentially exit their business, or they might want to be transitioning into something else. And they're not sure about that either, because they've tied themselves to their job role. But you are not your job role. You are not the organization. You need to have that sense of self to really contribute to the organization, I believe.
No, I completely agree. And I think the more you know who you are, the more clarity you have, the better you'll show up for yourself and the organization and the team. And yeah, I think that's just such powerful advice. But it's, again, we get sort of like swept up in this big machine of a big business, and we kind of lose ourselves. And like I said, you know, if the business is performing well, we're doing well, and vice versa. And it's like detaching yourself from the results of a business. And even for me now, speaking from a very small business owner, you know, to somebody that, you know, I had a habit of saying, well, when things were going well in my career, I was good. I was a good person. And I've learned that the two are just a separate, and I've got to try and separate them. And I think that was a really big journey for me to go on. I know I'm still going on that journey. I know a lot of people still struggle with that, as their sense of worth is tied up in what they do. But again, it's just that sense and self and who you are, and making sure that you know that you're enough. Doesn't matter about your job title or where you work. That's so, so important. But I was really inspired when I was reading your story, Julie, and I hope you don't mind if we go here, but you had a diagnosis with cancer a little while ago. And what was really inspiring when I was reading that is a lot of people hear that word and that diagnosis, and they think that's life as I know it over. Can you share, and if you want to share, that journey and how you have overcome that and the lessons that you've learned from going through that as well?
Yeah. So that's a lot. But I think you're right. When you do receive that diagnosis, you are faced with that question, am I going to die? Why? It's really confronting. And you hear about stories about it happening. But when you are faced with your own mortality, it's like, wow, this is big. And I felt like I was on like a roller coaster where the wind was just blowing really fast. I couldn't hear anything, and I was on a very steep downward slope. And that's the reality of how I felt at the time, because that was on the 6th of October in 2021. And you know, you go through the surgery and you think that's it, but of course there's the treatment beyond that. So I was diagnosed with stage 3 melanoma cancer, and it was aggressive. So what this taught me was I have a lot of resilience that I could tap into. I knew that, but sometimes it can be really, really difficult. So I did get to a stage where I went down a really dark hole, and because you feel you're out of control, you can't necessarily control this. It's not, and I'm a control freak. I love to control. And I was feeling extremely vulnerable, and I don't necessarily like that either. So it's like, oh man, this is not good. And it's really where you have to look yourself in the mirror and go, okay, so you've done all this work, you've learned all of this stuff, you preach this stuff, you teach this stuff, so now you've got to apply it to yourself. And that is ultimately the decision that I made. Because one thing I was very, very clear on is I did not want this cancer to define me. I would not be defined by this cancer. So I'd created a lot in my life up to this point, and it was not going to determine the rest of my life. So I know that was a decision that I made. So I'm like, okay, who are you now? So I had to, it's like tapping back into, right, so you're going through all of this. Yes, it's shit. Would you go through this? No, but you're in it. So it's accepting your reality. So that's the first process I really had to go down, because you could say that I was in denial. It's like, this isn't happening. You know, I don't want this to happen, and feeling very angry. But then it's like, once I accepted my reality, I then thought, okay, so it's like I'm at a T intersection right now. So you can go down the victim road, and you would be incredibly justified to go down that road. Feel sorry for yourself, blame, justify, whatever that looks like for you. Or I can make the more empowered choice, which is more aligned to who I am as a person, and that is, you go down, I call it the victor road, and I write about this in the book. So you can take responsibility for what is going on right now, even if you don't like it. You can allow yourself to feel crappy, but be curious. Be curious about why you're feeling that way, and how can you move through it? Who do you need to ask for support from? And it's just continually reminding yourself that you have been through challenge before, lots of them, and you can do it again. And what I'm really, really clear on now is I have a firm belief that I will beat this. That is not a question in my mind. So then I will do whatever it takes to do that. Right, so that is like my ultimate goal. That is my mindset. So I suppose I tapped into my mindset to be my superpower. So it's like, if that's what you want, what do you need to do? So that my mindset would inform my actions. And one of the things I learned that I really had to do on this journey is to use my voice. So when you're in situations, I have no reference for cancer or medical. I've always been really fit and healthy my entire life. So I've got no reference for this not feeling well for the whole cancer journey. What do you do? What don't you do? What treatment do you choose? So many choices. But I really had to advocate for myself. And when things weren't working, when my gut was telling me this is wrong, what they're telling you is wrong, I had to really speak up. And you don't want to be seen as disrespectful or sort of, I suppose, disrespecting people's professional opinion when that's their level of expertise. It's not yours, but you know you. And this sort of translates to not only challenge or cancer. It's like you know you. Within career decisions, what people are telling you you're capable of and what you're not capable of. So really advocating for myself was really, really important. And to be honest, I lost a lot of confidence throughout the cancer journey, like a lot of confidence. So I've really had to rebuild that over the past, I'd say, year, where I've really got back into my business. So it's like, okay, well, you say you don't want this to define you, so let's not. And, so I'd say, look, it has made me a stronger person, and it's made me ask for help more than I ever did before.
Thank you, firstly, for sharing that, Julie, because I think, like, you know, it would be inspiring for lots of people to hear that. And knowing a couple of people close to me right now going through something similar, I think it's really, yeah, it's something that I want them to hear as well. That's like, it doesn't need to define you. And I love the way that you've just navigated this. And again, I could relate to the whole control freak thing, because it's definitely something I am. I do have that tendency to wanting to control things, and you just had to surrender and just not resist. And I think when there's this quote that I love that pain is inevitable, but struggle, that's a choice. And it's like, we're going to go through life, we're going to experience pain, but how much time we struggle and what we choose to focus on, that's what we can decide. And that's what we have the power to control. But to come out the other side with that new lens, and I'm sure that everything you've learned from that experience, the resilience, the mindset, you can now apply to your business and to what you do. And again, probably leads me on to talk about your book now, as you always have a choice. And one of those choices is what you choose to focus on every day. And I can imagine that it would have been very, very easy for you to focus on the negative, to focus on all the worries and the concerns that were going through your mind. And it's just being so conscious of those thoughts and choosing, no, that's not what I think. I want to choose a more empowering thought. And again, just coming back to those choices that we're making on a minute-to-minute basis. But yeah, thank you for sharing. It's incredibly inspiring. And I'm looking at you now and you look extremely well and healthy and glowing through that camera. So F you, cancer. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. So moving on to like the book now and what you're working on, because I do love the title, You Always Have a Choice. Talk to me about that process of writing that book and what inspired you to write it and who you wrote it for as well.
Thank you for saying that. I think what inspired me to write the book is obviously is the cancer journey. After I wrote my first book, Busy, I swore that I was never going to write a book again. I'm not a natural writer, so it's not something I love doing. But as I was going through my journey and, you know, the challenges that I faced and having to use my voice, you know, advocate for myself so much and tapping into the strategies that I knew and could apply to my journey, I thought this, I hope, will help others. So it's really I would say it's an easy read. It's meant to be that way. It's not a massive book. It's relatively easily digestible, and it gives 9 powerful strategies as to how you can, you know, adapt to change, build unwavering resilience, but the most important thing is to lead a life that you love. And that's what I'm really, really passionate about, because life is way too short to tolerate. And going back to that control point, we can control one thing in life, and that is us. So you can only control you and how you respond to a situation that has been dealt to you. You can't control what life throws at you, but you can control how you respond. So I thought, yeah, you know, we do. We always have a choice. And I've made shocking choices. I've taken the victim road and, you know, adopted a really bad mindset in situations. And that was my choice, and I had to accept that. So I wrote this not necessarily for people going through a cancer challenge, but for people going through any challenge and change, because I think there's a lot of change fatigue out there right now and people are really struggling. It's like, how much change can I, you know, face into? How much resilience can I dig into? And is a life that I love achievable for me, given what's going on in the environment? But again, it comes back to you. You can only control you. So what's within your control? And so it's written for those people who understand that they do have a choice. And, you know, I meet them where people are at right now, which is feeling incredibly overwhelmed. It's juggling an enormous amount of balls in the air and sometimes wondering, why am I doing this? And then, you know, taking it, it provides a bit of a bridge from the overwhelm to the more empowered version of you. And as it takes them through that 9 steps, but one of the most, I think, empowering things that we can do for ourselves is to stop and pause and reflect on life that is, and just carving out that time that often we don't believe we have because we're so busy, can just give you so many insights and different perspectives into what you are doing and if you are leading a life in alignment with how you want to live it. And perhaps you've lost sight of that too. So it's a book that inspires people to really self-reflect. And I suppose the last thing is to, I want people to take melanoma seriously. I don't think we take melanoma seriously in this country. And it is what is classified as a national cancer. And let me tell you, a tan is not worth your life. And it's not something that treatment has been available for a long time. So, you know, there's the 50% success rate now. Whereas, you know, if I got this 5 years ago or 10 years ago, it would have been 10.
Wow.
So your chances aren't awesome. Mm. So I really want people to think about, the sun-bronzed culture particularly that we have here. But even, you know, over the world, it's just becoming all too common.
Mm. I completely agree. And I think that's a really powerful message for people listening to this because, coming from the UK, my skin can't deal with the sun in Australia. So I'm always slapping that factor 50 on and wearing shirts and things. But yeah, I think even I was talking to my mum the other day and she was saying, like, in her generation, it just, you know, with baby oil, you just baby oil and light on tinfoil, pretty much just fried yourself. Whereas, you know, these days, I think we are a bit more sun smart. So again, a really powerful message. But look, there was a lot of things that you just said in that, but I want to go back to this whole, your book and stuff. So I want to really pull out some of those strategies. I think that'd be really useful for people because I was actually reading an article in the paper the other weekend about how Lifeline is receiving, I don't know, 10 times the amount of calls at the minute with all of the financial stress that people are put under. And I think like what I'm sensing with just a few people that I'm close to as well is that you're right. They feel like maybe their dreams are kind of dying slowly. And it's just like, they do feel out of control. They're like, what do I do? And it all comes back to what you're saying is like, focus on what you personally can control, but also make sure that your goals really do align with the life that you want to live. But it's so complex, Julian. I try and find the answer in it myself because on one hand, we want to achieve these big things, but then on the other hand, we also want to be happy and have time and things with our family. And I sometimes think like, is there such thing as balance? Like, does that even exist? Like, so again, going back to these strategies of how we can just focus on the things that we can control and not sort of let our mind, you know, run away with us. How can we begin to, again, calm the mind, focus on what we can control, and all coming back to those choices that we're making each day that are really going to empower us and lead us to great things?
I think it's really interesting because if I just go back to when I was diagnosed, it's interesting how that puts everything into perspective very, very quickly and very, very clearly in that, you know, health is my absolute number one priority and everything I do sort of revolves around that. And it's really unfortunate that people have to face into something like this to realize that, because without your health, you're nothing. Okay. So, and that's just a fact. And I totally agree with you. I don't believe that there is balance. What is balance? Like, it's trying to find that equal of work and life. And it just doesn't, it doesn't work that way. So it's like understanding you've got one life and you've got to make it work for you, not against you. So I talk about in the book, you know, through this busyness trap, this vortex that we get caught into, we do things out of a misaligned sense of obligation. We do things to please others. We're driven externally because all of a sudden we care so much more about what other people think of us. You know, if we're keeping up with the Joneses, you know, when we look on social media, everyone seems to have more than us. They're a better partner, parent, whatever it looks like than us. They're skinnier. They've got more wealth, whatever that looks like. So we're faced with these comparisons all the time. And it can take us down a road where it's not aligned to who we are. And as I said before, the biggest thing that I recommend that people can do is to pause, is to stop. You've got to stop. And it sounds counterintuitive when you're going through the motions. It's got to stop and you've got to reflect on what is exactly going on in your life. And if you think of your life or your obligations as that metaphorical juggling of balls, it's like, what are the balls that are crystal? What are the crystal balls that you absolutely have to keep up in the air that if you drop them, they will shatter and you can't pick them up again? And secondly, what are the balls that are the rubber balls? So what are the balls that you can let go and bounce? And contrary to popular belief, that can be work. And the third thing is, what are the concrete balls that you are juggling that feels so heavy and so burdensome that if you drop those, it would feel so liberating? And you're juggling them because you're doing it for other people, or it's simply because it's just got into a bad habit and you're just doing things because it's just something that you've done and you can't remember why. So it's working out your priorities and coming back to those, because we can lose sight of what they are through the, you know, the whole busyness and running the race of life, but also they change. Like, you're not going to have the same priorities in life as you did a couple of years ago or even a year ago, depending on what happens. So I believe it's just getting really clear on that and then thinking and asking yourself the question, am I living a life that I love? Like, really? Am I doing all the things that are going to get me towards achieving a life that I love? And is that life, you know, that I've got, you know, pictured up here, is that actually what I want? Does that mean something to me? Or is it a version of what others might expect for me? Is this career goal that I'm going for, is that really what I want, what I want, or is that what someone else wants for me?
These are really big but also quite scary questions to ask. And it's really interesting how life unfolds, because I've always been somebody with a plan.
Yep.
I love a plan. But I've also realized that plans can change, and things that I've thought would give me happiness and fulfillment when I've gone after them haven't. And it's left me questioning my choices. And it's really funny. And I think we are just constantly evolving, and things are constantly changing around us. And what we want maybe a year ago maybe isn't even what we want now. And I think the one good thing that came from the pandemic was it threw a lot of people into reflection. And it forced a lot of people to pause. I know it did me. And I was like, what am I doing? Why am I worrying about this? What am I chasing this for? Like, what's important to me? And it really actually was a reset for me as well. But as you were sort of speaking, then I think what I find hard balancing is the being happy in the now and being content in the present and grateful and setting my life up the way I want my life to be set up. And I am content with life. However, I do have goals. I do know that I'm working towards something at the minute. And it's that balance between trying to maintain this level of gratitude for the here and now whilst I work towards that goal, But I'm also of the mindset of, well, what if that goal then changes? And am I constantly going to be in this spiral of chase, 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 and never just be present and happy in the now? So yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
I think it's, look, for me, and I am not perfect. I don't proclaim to be perfect at this at all. You know, and there can be often a sense of impatience with, you know, getting to the goal because we love instant gratification now. But I think it's, I think something that has worked for me is reflecting at the end of each day on what I'm grateful for. And so that would be the first thing, having that gratitude practice. And the second thing would be understanding, you know, that life is a, it's a marathon. It's not, you know, your sprint, it's not your race. And that if you're getting a sense of achievement from ticking off your goals progressively, then you're achieving along the way, and that can create, you know, that sense of success and therefore wanting to go further. But I think it's really dependent on the goal that you're striving to achieve, because we face into so much change now. It's just constant. Like, you don't know what's coming at you anymore and what could change tomorrow. So we have to be open to being adaptable and to being flexible with our goals now. I think that just needs to be a bit of a mindset. It's almost as though you expect it to change slightly, and in understanding that your road to getting to a goal might not be linear, or it might not be a trajectory. It's sort of like a bit of a jungle gym now. It's like you go here to go back, to go across and then up, and you might go back and then up again. So I think it's, if you innately know, if your intuition is telling you that this is the right goal for you, then I think it is the right goal. It needs to be something that means something for you, that you're passionate about, not something that you think sounds good or think others might want, or it might make you look good, because then it goes into the whole ego thing. It's like, if I get this, I can say this and I'll be amazing. So I think it needs to be something that's incredibly meaningful. And if your intuition's going, yeah, that's it, then that's it. But if you don't feel anything about your goal or about what you're wanting to achieve, then I think you need to ask some questions why.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely solid advice. And I think that maybe in my 20s when I set goals, it was very more materialistic, like I want to buy a house and I want to do this and I want to do this. And then you get the house and you go, oh, is this all there is? And the why wasn't strong enough and there was no meaning and there's no fulfillment. So when I reflect now, it's like when I set a goal, it's like, well, who would I need to become in order to achieve that? But also, what's the why behind it? And what's the deeper meaning of why do I want to achieve that? And what would that mean? And who also that impacts and who would that help? So it's interesting, but it's been a journey, and it's one that we're constantly evolving through ourselves. But I was just thinking then, as we were sort of talking about the title of your book, You Always Have a Choice. And I'm such a big believer that we need to take responsibility for every single thing in our lives. And I think that as soon as we do, we then have, we regain our power. As soon as we blame, you know, the government, other people, the bank, we are giving away our power. And it's a really, really hard thing to do. And I'm not saying it's easy. I still struggle with this myself. But let's just say someone's listening to this right now and going, right, well, I've made a series of bad choices in my life. And I'm taking ownership for that. I am where I am now because of those bad choices. How can they begin to trust themselves again? And you mentioned the word intuition, because I think sometimes we've made a series of bad choices and we're in this bad spot, we don't trust ourselves. And then that can lead to worse choices again. So how can we get out of that rut of making those bad choices?
It's an interesting question, because often, you know, our bad choices in life can teach us something. And it's a matter of if you're self-aware enough to understand what the teachings are, what the lesson is, and if you learn from them. So it's not a bad choice if you learn from it. It's not a bad decision unless you learn from it. So, but it's also an understanding, like, you can't change the past. Your decisions that you've made in the past are your decisions. You can't influence that at all. What you can influence are the decisions that you make from here on in. And I totally agree with taking responsibility for them. So they're your choices. When you take responsibility for those, that is when, as you said, you regain your power and you can then understand the reasons as to why you made them and learn from those. And that's where the learning can come into it. And it's certainly, you know, it's not an opportunity to allow, to beat yourself up, to make yourself feel bad, because we all do it. We all make, you know, what's classified as a bad decision, but it's what you learn from it in the process. So I think in terms of improving choices moving forward, or improving your decisions moving forward, it's, I keep saying this word, it's really like connecting back to your values. I think it's on being really, really connected to your values and what you stand for. And therefore, are the decisions or the choices that you're making aligned with your values, your priorities, and what you stand for as a person? So if I share an example, there was one stage where I was taken to Malaysia on in the role of motivational coach. Okay, so that was my title at the time. And there was an activity organized at this event, and I was to be part of this. And what it was, it's for people to break through their fear, you know, their fear barriers, or get out of their comfort zones. And what you had to do was handle a snake. Now, that went against everything that I stand for, and it went against my core beliefs, because I'm a huge animal lover, and for that snake to be in that bag, it would be drugged, and that is totally against what I stand for. So I had to make this decision. It's like, okay, so are you going to decide to handle this snake and go against everything that you stand for? Or are you going to make the decision to be true to you and take responsibility for what comes with that? So I made the decision to stay true to who I was, and I chose not to handle the snake. And that was not looked upon well. And I haven't been invited back to be part of an event of that nature again. And it's like, you can go down, oh my God, you know, that's cash flow. That's, what are people going to think of me? And, you know, there could be an annual thing that you can be part of. But I would have regretted that decision for the rest of my days. So I took responsibility for what came with that, and I'm okay with it. And I say, it's not easy. And it was like that, oh my God, what ifs? But I had to stay true to who I was and not compromise my values. And that is where the power and can come into play, when you are totally anchored to who you are, what you stand for. It's like that, you can be like a tree, if you like. Like a tree, and the roots are your values and what you stand for, what you don't. And the tree can sway. Like, I swayed, but then I stood firm. So I'm not going to fall over that way. I'm staying true to who I am. So I hope that analogy, you know, helped in terms of answering that question. And it's not easy. It's not something that you can just do with a click of a finger. And sometimes you might make a bad decision, and I often still do it. And it's like, I think when you feel bad about it, I think when you feel bad about making that decision, you know it was wrong, and you know not to do it again.
Absolutely. And you just preached something there that I firmly believe in, is like that whole self-awareness piece. Because when you know who you are, you know your values, and doing my values was the best activity I've ever done, because I know that value number one is health. So for example, I do not book podcast meetings before 9 o'clock, because between the hours of 5, when I'm waking up to do my meditation, till 9, I'm meditating, going for a run, going for a bike ride, going to the gym. But though that time for me is protected, that is sacred to me. You will not catch me on my phone. You'll not catch me reading my emails. That's dedicated to health. So for example, if a meeting request came in at 8:30, I would say easily no, because that's my time and I've protected that and I've worked hard to be able to do that. Sometimes I might even push it out till 10. If I'm like, no, do you know what? I just need that little bit more time for me, or I'm feeling like I need a little bit longer in bed today. So, but again, it's just knowing my values. Number one is health. And then the second one is growth. So I'm always wanting to push myself into slightly uncomfortable positions. But if I go, oh, I want to say no to that, I go, well, hang on a minute. You said your value is growth and this would be really good growth for you. And so just knowing those top two for me makes it so much easier to make these decisions. And the third one is freedom. I really do value freedom, freedom to choose, freedom of choice, freedom to live where I want to live and do what I want to do. So just knowing myself at that really deep level enables me to just make these decisions with ease. And then that does lead to better choices and decisions. So I think that's such a key message that I really want people to take away, because you just said about the values in the tree. I thought that's such a good analogy and such a good story, because it didn't matter that you were potentially losing some business. You were like, no, that goes against all of my values. Because I think honestly, as soon as you sway away from your values, you're then living out of alignment, and that can lead to far worse consequences than simply saying no and standing in your truth. So I think that's such a powerful story. But look, let's talk about your business now as well, because you go into a lot of teams and companies and turn around really toxic cultures and underperforming teams. So, and look, from your corporate career, like 20 years in corporate, I'm sure you've seen a few red flags and a few things that you go, oh, that's going to lead to a few problems there. So talk to me about, you know, your role in your business and how you're really going in and helping businesses turn around their toxic cultures.
Mm. It's interesting what I'm brought in, because I'm brought in to fix it. So it's like, you know, a proactive approach probably would have been better here. But, you know, it's I start at the start. So I clearly get, a brief from the leader who has told me their perception of why things are going pear-shaped or why things are as they are. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's always the team not doing what they should be doing. And, you know, that well might be the case. But what I also like to do is to get their team perspective as well. And that was really crucial for me to be able to turn around my team. It was, okay, so I got the brief from the person I took over from, but what does the team think? Like, what's going on here? And from all 26 of them, I found out their reasons as to what they thought was going wrong, what they thought would change it to be something more inspiring, and where they thought the business could head to. So I always, always talk to the team to get their perspective. And then you get a common link, and you can work from there. So that is my starting point. And it's really understanding, okay, so where are we wanting to head here? Like, what's the dream? What's the goal? And do we have the right people in the right roles to get us there? So it's very much about creating that alignment. So they'll be understanding people's perceptions of what the culture is, why the culture is a particular way, and doing, yeah, I suppose you call it a bit of a diagnostic around culture. And then it's really setting the sails again to turn around the ship towards the direction where people want to go. And it's getting that commitment from the team, but it has to be theirs. It can't be mine. It's got to be their ideas on the how. And that's what I'm really big on. So I might set up suggestions for what, but they'll come up with the why and they'll come up with the how. That's got to be them. And then there'll be a role in keeping people accountable to what they say they're going to do. And often that's what I see as a huge gap when businesses go wrong. So it's whether leaders aren't keeping their team accountable to results, so KPIs, and behaviors. So there's that accountability piece. And often there's a real connection piece that's missing. So I speak to an enormous amount of leaders who believe that they don't have time to have one-on-ones with their team. And I always think you just don't have time not to have because not building the relationship with your team, not understanding them at an individual level, not understanding what motivates them and the challenges that they're going through now. Because, you know, we all bring our whole self to work now. It's not I'm a work person, I'm a home person, I am the person. And the leaders need to deal with the whole gamut, which is not easy for them. But at least if they understand where things are at, they can then get the support that they need. It's like, oh, I don't know, I'm not good at dealing with this. They can bring in someone to help them, or they can call someone to help them. So I'm not blaming leaders, I'm not blaming team, but that there needs to be some alignment in, you know, where are we expected to go, what are we expected to do, and then how are we going to get there?
I just think communication is just so important. And over the years of recruitment, like the thing that kind of always baffles me is that people end up leaving roles or being let go from roles, and then you speak to the person that's been let go and they go, well, Georgia, I was so unaware of the things that are now coming up. Like, no expectations were made, no direction was given to me. I wasn't asked anything, and all of a sudden I've been giving my notice, and I don't know why. And I think that is just the biggest mistake I see companies make, is that you've got to have this candid feedback. And if people aren't told what's going wrong, they can't fix it. And that's not fair. And that to me is a very toxic culture, because you're going to have people walking around thinking that they're doing a great job, and then behind their back, someone's saying they're not doing a great job, and then they're being let go. And then that can really have an impact on that person's confidence, self-belief. And, you know, you're dealing with people. This is the thing, like businesses and cultures, they are people. It's so important to get it right and have these conversations and communicate. Because like you just said then, the leaders might think something, but the team might think something. And it's bringing both parties together, which sounds like you do so well. But look, I've seen it all in recruitment, as you could imagine. But it's a problem. And I do think communication is absolutely vital. And I'm not saying management and leadership is easy. It's not. But it, you know, if you are in that role, you are responsible for people, and it's not a job to be taken lightly. And if you can't find time to really understand your people's motivations and goals and what they may be struggling with, then perhaps the leadership role isn't for you. So yeah, it's very complex, but I love what you said then about sort of really getting everyone together and understanding the problem, and then getting the direction, and then the accountability piece is absolutely key as well. So yeah, what you do is very, very needed, Julie. And I think a lot of businesses, you know, they're struggling with culture, especially over the last sort of number of years where we're sort of navigated back into the office. There's hybrid, there's so many complex things to work through. And look, ultimately, I think people are just doing the best they can as well. And we've got to cut some people some slack and some grace, because a lot of people just get promoted with no prior training. It's like, here you go, here's a team of 10 now, good luck. And they're like, hang on a minute, you know, I was good at my job, but I'm not a leader, or I've not led before. So again, well, I do have empathy for those people as well. But look, I also appreciate your time, and I think we've almost been talking for an hour now, but I could just talk to you all day. But look, you obviously, from all of your journey that you've gone on, and, you know, teaching people around leadership and mindset and things, like, Do you have any sort of practices yourself that you think, if I could just do advise people to do this every day, if they want to show up as their best self, if they want to get healthy, if they want to find that time to pause and reflect and get clear on what they want, any practices or habits that you personally do on a daily or a weekly basis that you think that has really helped me discover who I am and what I want?
Habits or practices. I think that my self-reflection at the end of the day has really helped me do that. And obviously, there's a lot of work before that in terms of understanding who I am and what I stand for and what I want, what my priorities are. But I ask myself three questions at the end of a day. And it was, you know, what have I achieved today? And the questions is, what have I achieved today? Not what haven't I achieved today? So it's that. And then it's like, how have I been as a leader today? Because I believe that we are all leaders, regardless of title, because we are a leader of self in the first instance. And you can't be a leader of others unless you're a leader of self. So how have I been as a leader today? And really think about that. It's like, have I been making excuses? Have I been procrastinating? Did I speak poorly to someone today? Was I impatient? You know, did I handle this situation really, really well? Was it in alignment with who I was? How were my decisions? Sort of that whole self-reflection. And then what can I do tomorrow to make it better than today? So there are three questions that I ask myself that get me to think deeper than the superficial, you know, what happened today? What actions did I do? And it is that, but it's a bit more than that. And it's bringing it back to self. So what do I need to do tomorrow to make it better than today? So how can I be a better leader? How can I be a better person? Did I scroll when my partner was talking to me today? Or when my kids, do I use the word busy too much? What is it for you? And is how you're behaving in alignment with who you want to be and what you want to be known for?
I love that. And reflection is something that I am very passionate about. I journal every night. We'll try to journal every night. I journal most nights. And I am also asking myself those questions of like, how can I be that 1% better every day? What went well today? What do I still need to work on? And you're so right, Julie. It's such a powerful practice. And what comes out is pretty amazing. And I go, God, if I hadn't paused to reflect on that, I wouldn't have known to work on that. And yeah, it's definitely made me a better listener, a better leader, and I'm still working a lot of things. But if people just do that practice alone, I know they'll see a lot of benefits. But Julie, where can I send people to find out more about yourself, your work, and how you can help them? Where do you hang out the most?
Oh, hang out the most on LinkedIn. I'm quite prolific on LinkedIn. They can also, you know, jump on the website, juliehyde.com.au. That's got everything that I do there. So
amazing. We'll put the links in the show notes, but please go and follow Julie. And I highly recommend your book. It sounds absolutely fantastic. I'm going to go and download that onto my Kindle as well. And I'll probably learn a thing or two. But Julie, thank you so much for being here today. It's been an honor chatting with you. Thank you for sharing your journey with us. It's been truly inspiring. So thank you. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you. Thank you.